You're listening to Carrie Lutz's Financial Survival Network, where you get valuable information you just can't find anywhere else. To thrive in today's trying times, you need the Financial Survival Network, now more than ever. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and get your free newsletter and gift. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.
And welcome. You are listening to watching the Financial Survival Network. I'm Carrie Lutz. Well, hey, we got an FOMC meeting coming up tomorrow on December 14th, and we've got inflation. Well, inflation numbers were subdued. What a shock. Well, what does it all mean? Where are we heading? Our good friend is with us now, David Scranton, Scranton Financial. David, it's great to see you back. So everything's going great. The economy, so the stock market is going up now today. So what are we worried about?
We're worried about the Fed making a misstep. That's what we're worried about, Carrie. You know that a lot of the recessions we've had in history were Fed created, and I'm not blaming them because they're not getting a lot of legislative help where they need to fight inflation. And the Fed only has one tool, and that's to raise rates and try to tamp down demand for goods and services. And that can cause recession. So that's what everybody's really worried about is what we're seeing the Fed do. And that's why it's not so much about what the Fed does tomorrow in terms of interest rate hikes. It's more about listening to the words that come out of the mouth of Jerome Powell for future guidance, if you will.
Future guidance. So, hey, isn't it possible that the Fed has already made a mistake and, in fact, made many mistakes over the past year by not raising rates at a more gradual rate? Every other month, 25 basis points, the market would have shaken it off. But all of a sudden, they wake up one day and they say, oh my God, inflation's not transitory. We got to do something. We got to 75 basis points. That's the magic number. What happens if they do 75 basis points tomorrow, David? What's that going to do?
Well, the markets will react negatively to that for sure. We don't think they're going to do that, but the markets will react negatively because we're starting to see inflation get more tame. So yes, the Fed started too late and then the Fed overreacted. And the analogy I always make is it's like sailboat racing. You know, you take a chapter out of Dennis Conner's book, the famous America's Cup captain that knows that when you're trying to trim a sail in to increase your boat speed, you don't trim it to where you think the sail needs to be right now. You trim it about half that because then the boat adjusts. And oftentimes half is about the right amount. Once the boat adjusts, now you've got maximum boat speed. If you trim the sail immediately to where you think visually it should be, you'll actually over trim it and you'll slow down the boat and you'll lose the race. And unfortunately, the Fed hasn't figured that out. They came out late, as you indicated, and they came out heavy handed. And I think they've already done enough to fix inflation. Now they've just got to sit back a little bit and wait for the things they've done to actually work their way through the economy.
Yeah, well, if I could just paint that analogy a little bit more about the sailboat, it's like they're so worried about what directions the sails are in, they've missed the fact that they've got a major leak and they're taking on water. And in a couple more sessions, it's not going to matter where the sail's pointing.
Yeah, no, it is an issue. And we really need congressional support because there's, you know, inflation, as you know, and a lot of your listeners know, is because you have too much demand for goods and services, not enough supply. So you could do one of two things. You can either squash down the demand, which is what the Fed, it's their only tool, but then you run the risk of, you know, gee, do I kill the patient? Is the medicine going to kill the patient before it kills the disease? In other words, is it going to kill the economy and put us in recession before it kills inflation? And that could happen. What really has to happen is we need smart policies coming out of Washington to help with the supply side and to help be pro-business, because even though supply chain issues might be working their way through, companies now are forward-looking. So companies are already saying, wait a minute, we're likely to have a recession. We're going to trim down our inventories. We're going to slow down the creation of supply of goods and services. So they're actually creating a supply problem on anticipation of a recession and reduced demand. So again, that's something that could be helped more in the legislative branch to have more business-friendly policies and to have policies that are pro-supply chain And all of a sudden, the Fed wouldn't have to do all the heavy lifting that they're currently forced to do.
Right. Well, you really think that they can solve inflation with these problems? We got energy. It's not just a question of energy costs being high. It's a question of policies that discourage the production of additional energy.
There you go.
That's not going to work. I mean, yeah. Let's face it, because unless you have a deflationary recession, which, well, they are deflationary by nature, but unless you have a really deflationary event, prices of everything are going to keep going up because energy is going to keep going up because there's going to be less and less of it because we're supposed to look for the wind, put our kites up in the air, and have solar cells on our cell phones, keep our cell phones working, right?
And that's a great example, Kerry. The energy is, you know, when you think about, parts of the world that are not making the moves that we are, you know, we can't do it by ourselves, okay? We need other cooperation. It's going to be done at a reasonable pace. Is it great to focus on the carbon footprint? Yes, it is. But like a lot of things, sometimes you let idealism get in the way of reality. And we've already made some major steps to reduce carbon emissions just with traditional technology. And we can make more steps there while we're working on green energy. But for us to come out and just unilaterally say, you know, we're not going to be friendly toward drilling, fracking, or processing of oil, it just doesn't make any sense. It's going to hurt our economy more than anybody else.
Yeah, so what could possibly go wrong? And then we talk about confidence. The whole system, fiat money, all of that relies upon confidence. And I hesitate to point out that the root of confidence is con, right? But honestly, though, when you look at confidence, there's not much to be confident about here, yeah. Is there?
Well, it is difficult. I get that. You know, we've been off the gold standard now for what, almost five decades, and that changed a lot. The whole world, though, is on a fiat currency system. And, you know, people are pointing to Bitcoin. Well, to me, you can't have a currency that loses 75% of its value in the matter of a year. That doesn't work. So we're not ready to turn to Bitcoin yet. We don't have an alternative to the fiat currency. And all of the civilized world is on various fiat currencies. So I agree it's a problem, but it's a universal problem. And, you know, it's almost like the concern with credit default swaps in 2008, but maybe even in a more positive way, though. You know, the whole thing was in 2008. You know, company A was insuring company B was insuring company C, and company C was insuring company A, right? What did you have? You had nothing. You had a big circle, but
a circle jerk.
One failed, they all failed. Well, the same is true now. And what I can't help but think, and maybe it's the optimist in me, I don't know, is that because we're all based on fiat currencies, right? If one starts to go, they're all going to start to go. And at that point, you know, what do? Just forgive every other country's debt and call it a wash? You know, maybe that ends up what has to happen, and we just clean the slate and start again. But again,
there's a lot to be said for a clean slate. But, you know, it's obviously the last one to go will be the U.S. dollar. I don't think there's any question about that. Just look at the state of the euro, the yuan. All of these currencies are, you know, in trouble.
Don't just survive, thrive. The Financial Survival Network.
Goldterra Resource Corp is a gold exploration company that has assembled a highly prospective district-scale land position on the doorstep of the city of Yellowknife in Canada's Northwest Territories. Goldterra is currently focused on expanding and delineating gold resources at the company's Yellowknife City Gold Project with a goal of discovering over 5 million ounces. With ready access to infrastructure and multiple high-grade gold discoveries, Goldterra is on track to re-establishing Yellowknife as one of the premier gold mining districts in Canada. Goldterra trades as YGT in Toronto and YGTFF on the OTC. For more information, go to goldterracorp.com. That's goldterracorp.com.
This is the Financial Survival Network, the information you need to thrive now more than ever.
That's right. And that's why, Kerry, I like to focus on what we can control. You know, Yeah, I don't want to send a message to, you know, your show is financial survival, right? Mm-hmm. And, I, you know, as far as I'm concerned, your listeners, you know, they can't control what happens with currencies. And I think for most people, especially if they're retired or within 10 years of retirement, to try to just take a bunch of their money and put it in gold or silver, you know, small parts fine, but too much is not good. Retirees mm-hmm. need income. Gold and silver, last time I checked, doesn't generate income. So I think what people need to focus on is, hey, what can I control in my personal finances? And I can't control if these currencies start to default over time. I do know that I'm living in a country where, like, as you just said, our dollar would be one of the last ones to go. So you have to plan for not the catastrophic worst, but plan for everything up to that catastrophic worst, knowing that if the catastrophic worst really does happen, you know, the best thing you could do is own farmland and grow your own food at that point.
You know, yeah, well, always plan for the worst and hope for the best, I guess, David.
Yeah. And, you know, some people live in parts of the country. Hey, they have their own farmland. That's great. A lot of us, that's never going to happen. You ask me to do farming, I wouldn't know where to start, right? So I just have to look at it and say, okay, what are the chances that this failure occurs during my lifetime?
Hopefully.
And even though I'm in my 50s, I don't think that'll happen. But so I've got to look at for myself, for all my clients, for all your listeners, okay, what can we do to protect our money in the current system? Understanding the system is flawed, it's not perfect, but also knowing that if it truly fails, there really is no safe haven.
Mm. This is true. I don't know about you, but I don't think I could go hunting for food or foraging for it. Maybe foraging, find some berries. I guess I could throw out a fishing line, catch some fish. But basically, without a functioning monetary system, you know, civilization comes to a dramatic fork in the road, shall we say. I wouldn't say it'll disappear, but it will change dramatically. And maybe yeah. at that point, the depopulation, those out there, those forces looking for it will get their way.
Yeah. Yeah. At that point, we go back to a barter system of sorts. That's all it is. Bartering this for that. And, you know, it's important. I guess if somebody does want to plan against the doomsday scenario, they've got to ask, what am I good at doing or creating that people actually need? And that's a great question to answer in a doomsday scenario, because that's a commodity or a service that you can, you know, barter for food down the road. But again, I truly don't believe, Kerry, that, you know, and you and I both, neither of us are spring chickens. And I think a lot of our listeners aren't spring chickens either, right? A lot of your listeners are sure. probably 50 sure. and over. Yeah. So we've got to look at it and say, okay, it's probably not going to happen in the course of our lifetime. There is no safe haven. How do we protect ourselves? And I always tell people, the first and foremost thing is this. When you retire, you're trying to replace income. So you have to have income in retirement. And that's got to be the first thing to solve for. Once you have your investments generating enough interest and dividends, then what you do with the rest of it, you want to speculate on Bitcoin, or you want to speculate on commodities, whatever you want to do is fine. But you've got to replace your income from a paycheck with your income from your investments. And when I say income, I mean interest and dividends. Kerry, you know, a lot of people out there today, a lot of advisors do crazy things with people's money. They use these withdrawal strategies where, okay, if you have $1 million, we can withdraw 3 or 4% of that base every year, and you probably won't run out of money. And they run a model, a probability weighted model called Monte Carlo simulation. And right. they say there's a 90% chance you're not going to run out of money. Well, there's still a 10% chance that you do. So the only safe way to really retire, to plan, to protect yourself, is to put your money in things that generate enough interest, enough dividends, and some that should be contractual in things like bonds and bond-like instruments, especially now that rates on those instruments have come up. And to put your money in things that generate income so that you don't have to worry about the day-to-day principal fluctuations and, gee, whether the market goes down because the Fed raises rates too quickly, like's happening now. Because you know that you're still getting your paycheck, you're getting your income week after week, and you won't be forced to go back to work.
I think that is a great point, David, and I think that's many of my generation, your generation's greatest fear is that, you know, they're going to live longer than their money lasts.
Yeah, running out of money before you run out of life, that is the biggest fear. And studies have shown that. that literally boomers are more afraid of running out of money, financial death, than they are physical death. I always talk about that. You know, I love the engineer, Terry. It comes to me, and now you might have some listeners that are engineers. And for you engineers, I want to let you know, I'm not picking on you. Well, I kind of sort of am, but not really. You know, the engineer says, well, look, you know, I'm 62. Nobody in my family has lived past 92. So I'm going to plan to spend my retirement money down over 30 years. And I try to explain to him that that's great in theory, but it, as Roosevelt had said, you know, it's there's nothing to fear but fear itself. It's not running out of money. It's the fear of running out of money. So imagine, Mr. Engineer, that 20 years later, you go to the doctor at age 82 for your physical, and your doctor says, guess what? You're in the same health you were 20 years ago the day you retired. God bless you. I don't know what you're doing, but keep doing it. You're going to live to be 100.
Mm-hmm.
And now you go home and you have 10 years worth of income left because nobody in your family lived to be 92. So you assumed you'd be dead by then, but now it looks like that may not happen. And all of a sudden, that good news from the doctor turns into bad news. And quite frankly, you can't even enjoy the last 10 years of retirement because you're stressed out about running out of money. And that's why I always tell people, you know, trying to have any sort of withdrawal program in retirement is financial suicide. It's the opposite of financial survival. You have to live off your interest and dividends. Like a good friend of mine says, who does live in the middle of the country in farmland, he says, hey, I've got a choice. I can eat my eggs and keep my chickens alive, and I'll have more eggs next year. Or I can kill the chickens and go home and cook chicken tonight. Well, if I kill the chickens, eventually I won't have any more eggs. So he always says, eat the eggs, keep the chickens alive.
Yeah, that's like, you don't want to eat your seed corn. That's for sure. And all right. Well, you've given us a lot to think about here. David, where is the best place to find you these days to connect with you on the web?
On the web, our holding company, we have four different companies. Our holding company is Sound Income Group. So you can go to soundincomegroup.com, look us up, and read more about us.
All right. And there's a link to that in the show notes on this interview on financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Click that link and sign up for your free newsletter. And if you got a question for David, myself, kl@carrylutz.com is the email address, or you can post it up on YouTube. We scan them periodically and we'll field the questions. Send them off to David for a response. David, as always, appreciate you coming on. We'll talk to you again soon.
Great being here, Carrie. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Carrie Lutz's Financial Survival Network, your solution to today's trying times. For the latest, go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.